And welcome to Tech Radio for this 14th day of July. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, we have Mac guru Joel Brovelite. We have Lemonly's John T. Meyer. And from the Bureau and Peer, Jeff Litterick will join us shortly. Will Bushy joins us as well in just a little bit to talk about an upcoming tech camp for girls. And SDPB's social media maven, Heather Benson, will join us as well to talk about Mark Zuckerberg's recent trip to South Dakota and why that's raised a few eyebrows in the livestock and farming community. We'll have all that on today's show. You ask the questions, we provide the answers. If you're a Facebook aficionado, that page is simply facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments or your questions there. Don't be shy. Our phone number is 800-524-3604. Twitter users can send questions to @KentSDPB. And that email address again is inthemoment@sdpb.org. inthemoment@sdpb.org. John T. Meyer, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a little while.
May, maybe. I don't know, early June. I've been gone traveling. I keep missing the off week since we're on every other week. So thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. What have you learned when you've been gone? Anything? Are you just vacationing or were these work
trips? I think it was a little bit of both. I think one time I was out, I took my dad, my brothers and I took my dad to the NCAA track meet out in Eugene, Oregon. That was like on his bucket list. He was a longtime track guy and ran track at Augustana. And so that was on his bucket list, which he loved. So I think I missed one show for vacationing. And then I can't remember if I was out visiting some clients or, I don't know, what have I learned? I've learned, as we know on the show, technology just continues to change, right? It's ever changing. I think the last time or a show or two ago, you guys were talking about Bitcoins and we've been talking about, you know, the rise and now the fall of Snapchat. And it's just, it's everything. It moves so quickly, which I guess is good. We have a show every 2 weeks.
Snapchat has fallen?
Well, it's the stock price is taking a tumble. Fallen as it doesn't exist anymore. They're just like Twitter, struggling to find ways to monetize, and they IPO'd and a lot of people made a lot of money, and now the expectations of what that means, right? Everything changes when you become a publicly traded company, and so the lens is hovering over Snapchat and people are watching closely.
Yeah.
So we'll see if it's a short-term thing or if they figure it out.
Well, the other topic I wanted to talk to you about today was you mentioned in an earlier email about tokens, and that's the let me try to explain it and you tell me if I got it right. There's a bunch of new cryptocurrency that folks have really kind of gotten eager. They've been, yes, become eager beaver investors on this stuff, and they just threw money at it, but there's no real value in these, right?
I think that part's open for debate. Probably. Okay. I don't know what you guys talked about a couple episodes ago.
We haven't talked about tokens yet.
Really? Okay. No. So yeah, I mean, years ago we joked on the show. I bought one Bitcoin because I was curious about it. I think I bought it for $199 at the time. This is probably like 2013 or so. And I finally February I decided, well, it was something at like $1,200 or $1,300 is what that one Bitcoin was worth, and so I had a 6x return on my one Bitcoin. I decided it was probably time to let it go for my one Bitcoin. So I felt pretty good. And then recently the Bitcoin was up, is valued as high as $4,000. So I could have had about a 20x return on my one Bitcoin. But yeah, it's an interesting space right now because a lot of people are jumping in. Some people know a lot about it, and unfortunately more people who are involved probably don't know much about it. And so these other coins have emerged. Ethereum is a really popular one, and Litecoin is a different type. And so essentially this cryptocurrency is this alternative form of currency that can be mined from the internet. And each type of currency, like Bitcoin or Litecoin or Ethereum, have their own set of rules and different ways that you code and use it. I don't know, what's your take these days, Joel, on cryptocurrency and tokens?
Well, you know, it's going to shake out how it's going to shake out. I think there's no doubt to people in the know that, you know, that form of dispersing money is the way it's going to be. I mean, I don't think that in 100 years people will be carrying coins in their pocket.
Agreed.
So, you know,
and when you say coins, you mean like real coins?
I mean actual coins, Bitcoins, yes. Or dollar, you know, paper folded money.
Yeah. I mean, even coins have almost disappeared already. But exactly. Yeah, cash, even credit card is what you're saying. Like, it'll be
digitally. Hard to tell if there will always be some sort of physical object that you can move money around with. But, I mean, right now, I mean, you can lose your debit card and go into your bank and get one, you know, 10 minutes later. So, I mean, it's just going to get, it's going to be like that, you know.
And that's why I find so fascinating some of the people I follow or read online. I mean, a lot of people, Silicon Valley folks, venture capitalists, some people are saying this feels a lot like early days internet, right? 1999, like the dot-com boom, which, as we also know, was followed by a dot-com bubble. But in theory, I agree, it's hard to say this long-term, whether no matter what coin it is, and maybe it's a coin that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it's going to be, yeah, definitely.
Isn't going to someday be the norm.
Yeah. Really what it's going to take is it's just going to have to be easier to use and more logical than whatever the at that time, the most popular form of money is, and right now it's the U.S. dollar. So
sure, and it's been interesting, Ken, because I think people get it's easy to get caught up in the hype, right? So people are making lots of money really quickly. I mean, this isn't like buying a stock that rises pretty quick. I mean, we're talking about 20-25x returns rapidly.
I know you haven't turned yours in yet, but do you?
No,
get
I did.
Oh,
I
you did turn it in.
I just said that, yeah. So, but I actually ended up buying some Ethereum earlier in the year and did pretty well on that. But still, we're talking about a couple thousands of dollars I invested because I still don't really fully. I'm still wrapping my head around and learning it, and I feel like it's probably not wise to invest in stuff you don't understand. Is generally my philosophy. So I'm not giving
doesn't stop lots of people.
I'm not giving any investment advice on this show, but I do think it's just interesting and a lot of people are very curious and people are jumping in who don't understand it.
And those are the folks that are getting burned. There's these joke tokens out there that people are investing in
I will say this, if you are interested and you do want to participate, you know, whether even it's just small amounts of money experimenting, I would recommend an app called Coinbase, Coinbase, you can download it from the App Store. It is safe and secure. It's regarded as probably the most reputable place to buy, trade, and sell tokens. And so you can connect it to your bank account, or you can, you know, wire money and purchase these tokens, and then that's where they're held in a safe, secure place. Because yeah, you're right, there is a lot of scams going on right now.
Our first great app tip of the day, ta-da! All right,
there you go.
Hey,
Coinbase. We need like a Mario, like ding.
Did it? Yeah, we do need that coin noise from the jumping Mario. Absolutely. We've got Will Bushy on the line. If you remember, Will was on talking about his book, geared to the, Will, that was geared to kind of, I don't want to use disparaging terms, nerdy kids, on how to, have those social values and how to do resumes and get hired kind of a thing is kind of the vibe I got from the book. Number one, Will, how's book sales going?
Yeah, well, thanks, Ken. Well, book sales are book sales, so it's a matter of how much you want to push it and how hard you want to push it. I mean, it sells okay on Amazon. It can always do better.
Sure. So, yeah, Prime Day, did you run a big sale on your book?
No, we're right in the middle of our gaming boot camps right now this summer, so I'm actually in Pier overlooking the Missouri River. So I didn't think a room full of kids screaming in the background was the way to call in. I've been busy going around the state, and we've done a bunch in Sioux Falls, and I'm up in Pier, and we'll be in Brookings here in a couple of weeks. So I did not have time to really do anything with the Prime Day. I probably should have.
I was going to ask you how the boot camps are going. Obviously, you're well.
Yeah, they're going really well. So far, all of them that we've hosted have sold out. Some of them sold out months in advance. It really just depends on the location and some of our sponsors. We were going to do just one up at SDSU this summer, and it ended up selling out within about 24 hours. So we ended up doing a second one the following week as well. And so we've got 30 girls over 2 weeks up in SDSU, and then we've got about 10 here in Pierre. This week, and then we've got one more left in Sioux Falls over at Raven in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Hey, Will, you should explain to, you know, I know, but tell people a little bit about what you do at these boot camps.
Yeah, excellent. So we teach, they're mostly middle school aged kids. They're kind of between 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade to build video games over a 5-day camp. We use a platform called Construct 2, so it's very much a drag and drop and build out events for the games. And we build about 5 or 6 games, just depending on the amount of kids that we have. And I know you were mentioning about the Bitcoin and the Mario there just a few minutes ago. One of the things that we build is a platform game very similar to Super Mario Brothers, and the kids really like that. I can't believe how many of these kids know all of those old retro games.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, and you've got a camp coming up that's that actually sounds kind of cool to me. I did this when I was a kid. I just took stuff apart. But you've got an interesting word for it. It's called Breaker Day?
Yeah, so I've got an event coming up on July 29th, which is a couple Saturdays, called the Girls Breaker Day. It's kind of like the opposite of a Maker Day. I know MB has hosted a couple of Maker Days over the last year where they've invited girls to come out and try to explore more around technology and science and create things. Well, like you, Kent, I mean, I enjoy taking things apart. There's no object or a technology I won't take apart to see what's inside. And so my daughter, last Christmas, her favorite tablet, it wasn't just any tablet, it was her favorite tablet, broke. And so she wanted to know if we could fix it. And I said, well, I don't think we can fix it, but you're more than welcome to take it apart. So I gave her a screwdriver, and she sat down for a couple hours and took every screw out of it and laid every last little piece out, and then proceeded to put it all back together and got it all put back together. Unfortunately, it didn't work in the end because it was something bad with the chips on it. But she thought that was pretty cool, and she said, hey, do you have anything else I could take apart? And I said, well, I got all kinds of stuff you can take apart. So I brought her a giant tote into the house full of old electronics, and it included all kinds of crazy things. There were laptops and power supplies, docking stations, printers. I mean, you name it, I had in there. And so she spent about maybe 10 days taking all these pieces apart, and she had a collection of the things she thought were cool, and the rest of it just kind of went into the back into the bucket. So I thought, well, that's pretty cool. I bet you most girls don't have an opportunity to explore electronics that way. So I thought, well, what if we did a Girls Breaker Day? And we just invited girls to come out and just take stuff apart. And so I made a couple calls to some people that I knew would be kind of interested in helping and sponsoring that type of event. And we were going to host it out earlier this summer at the bakery, but when they had to close down the facility there, we ended up having to move it. So it was July 29th out at the Journey Group.
Okay. You have a website. Is that still the SDGamingBootCamp.com that they can get the information on Breaker Day?
Yeah, if they go to breakerday.sdgamingbootcamp.com, I've got a special website set up, and you can do a RSVP to say you're coming. And we're going to have girls, if they want to bring their own electronics to take apart, there'll be some stipulations, like we can't take apart an old TV. But if they had some old toys, you know, maybe some of the old, an old Furby that they wanted to take apart, we'd love to have them bring that out. And then we're going to have a whole bunch of desktop computers there that they can take apart from Seam Recycling in town. And they're going to be able to take them apart, take as much of them as they want apart. And then we'll have like a create station set up where they can go and build a sculpture or something out of the parts. And then we're going to have a bunch of other things going on as well. I'll have some Arduinos and Raspberry Pis there if they want to do some electronics work. And we'll have some people there that can show them how to blink LEDs or build something real simple out of those. And then DSU is going to bring down some of their robotics. And Carl's Electronics in town is going to bring us a washing machine and a dishwasher and a dryer. And we'll be able to take the covers off of those and kind of explore them as well to see what's inside your everyday appliances that I'm guessing most girls don't have an opportunity to see what's inside of the washing machine.
Okay. That actually sounds fun. I was just thinking I'd like to do that myself. I haven't done it in years. And I, by the way, I never got it all back together again. I'd never had – I either had too many screws or not enough or whatever. And, you know, then, of course, I just moved on.
Yep. Well, and I love what you're doing, Will. Just getting technology opportunities, or you know that experience. Some of us, like you said, were people who just inherently maybe took things apart as kids. But getting that in the hands of children, and especially you know girls that who get to, you know, who maybe historically don't get that opportunity. We both, Joel and I here, have father of daughters, and I think
Some
awesome
people don't know, but girls are people too.
Well, and they care about tech, like they're curious.
Absolutely, they need to have the same opportunities. Absolutely.
I know, and I think Will's making that a priority, so that's great.
Cool, yeah, and I like that it goes beyond that, and there's exposure to the robotics from DSU, and if you like you said, you've got Raspberry Pi set up, which for folks that don't know what that is, we're not talking about snacks at break. You're talking about another sort of isn't really an operating system, is it, on a chip, or is it?
Well, the Raspberry Pi is essentially just a really small computer.
Yeah.
It runs a flavor of Linux. They call it Raspbian. It's about the size of a credit card, but thicker, about a half an inch thick. And it's a complete computer. You can plug a HDMI cable into it and plug it into a monitor. You can plug a keyboard and a mouse into it. And within 20 seconds, you can be playing Minecraft. But because it runs Linux, you can do anything else that a server would do. Of course, you're restricted on some memory and storage. But people will do things like build little light web servers on them or media centers so they can stream movies from Netflix, all those types of things. I'll probably just have some there for the kids to look at and hold and touch, and then we'll plug some into some TVs and they can play some video games on them.
Fantastic. Will, round us up one more time for us. Give us that website again and the date and how to get a hold of you so that if folks that are listening have daughters, granddaughters, nieces, that this sounds like a perfect camp for folks in the summer. How can they get a hold of you again?
Yeah, perfect. So it's going to be July 29th, and we're going to be there from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it's at the Journey Group, which is it's 4500 West 58th Street, but don't worry about that part. It's across the street from Sky Zone. That's how everybody will know where it's at. We'll have some signs up as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but it's a completely free event. It doesn't cost anything to come. Just come and explore, take some electronics apart. If you want to bring some of your own, that's great. If not, we'll have plenty there. And if you want to find out more information, you can go to breakerday.sdgamingbootcamp.com. And you can easily message me straight from that website as well if you have any other questions.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on the show today, Will, and keep us updated, will you?
Will do. Well, thanks, everyone. I appreciate it.
You bet. Well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a recent trip to South Dakota from someone we all know and love, our Facebook founder, Mark Zuckerberg. We'll do that after this quick break. And welcome back to Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts today, and we're talking tech. We have Mac guru Joel Brovelite on the line, Lemonly's John T. Meyer, and from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, Jeff Litterick is on the line as well. They're here to answer your questions, provide some answers if you need that, and basically talk tech. 800-524-3604 is the number you can call. Probably the easiest thing to do, if you'd like to drop us an email, that's inthemoment@sdpb.org, or if you happen to be grasping your phone in your hand at this moment, you can text us. Send a text to 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. We'd love to have that. Questions, comments, whatever you'd like at 956-7372. Gentlemen and lady, we have Heather Benson joining us, our social media maven at SDPB. She's here to sit in on a segment. Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook fame stopped by South Dakota recently. And what did we learn about this trip, Heather?
Well, he made a couple of stops here on Wednesday out in West River. His first stop was at the Sanford Lab, where he actually did a Facebook Live broadcast, which was well-received. Put us up in the props for having great internet access, even a mile underground.
Sure.
And then his second stop, interestingly, was at a cattle ranch near Piedmont, the Norman Family Ranch. And after he visited with them and learned a little bit more, and if you've been following his travels this year, and he's probably he's practically on a campaign like a presidential candidate across the U.S., one of the things he's been doing is right in this post that he put is he's set a goal to only eat meat that he's killed and help butcher himself this year. So he's been visiting a lot of family farms. He was at a salmon fishing expedition up in Alaska on July 4th. But on this particular post, he focused on the ag industry, particularly in South Dakota, particularly those ranchers hit by drought, and showed a lot of support for the ag industry, had a lot of good things to say. I think we all appreciated, you know, him taking the time to visit with us in our little old state. Mm-hmm. But it's sparked a second conversation online among livestock producers, particularly smaller ones, because Facebook, which is a huge factor in the marketing of all sorts of products and services in the year 2017, in April of this year, started enforcing a ban that had technically been a part of their commerce policy for quite some time, but had never been enforced. And that is a ban on using their marketplace, using their Facebook groups to sell animals of any kind. Now, I have no doubt that the intent behind it was, you know, there's been some exotic animal illegal sales happening on Facebook. There'd been, you know, he didn't want to encourage, I'm sure, like puppy mills and things like that. But it's had a tremendous impact. And I speak from personal experience, because in addition to working for SDPB, we operate a small farm on livestock sales. Mm-hmm. For small producers and even large producers, Facebook, with its immense ability to reach out to thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people across the country, had been a way for people to connect with both other livestock producers and with consumers at large to sell livestock. And now with the ban in place and you can no longer market in the way that you might, it's had a huge effect on the marketplace, and one that people are scrambling, who've spent years building a business about marketing on Facebook, are left without a marketing opportunity.
Do we know, was this a topic of conversation, or?
Well, I don't know that at the Norman Ranch it was, but it's interesting if you go through the comments on Zuckerberg's post on his page, mm-hmm. there's been a lot of people bringing it up, people from right here in South Dakota saying, hey, I love the fact you are here. This is great that you care about agriculture and care about farmers and ranchers, but here's how you could help us in a very real way. Words are great, but action is better.
Okay. And did he respond?
So far, I mean, it's only been 2 days and he's in the midst of traveling. We haven't had a lot of great response, but Facebook is known for, you know, investigating some of this stuff, and they do make changes. And I think this is the first spark of hope since April of 2017 that livestock producers are hoping they might be able to get his attention and get Facebook's attention to make changes that literally are the bread and butter of small livestock producers.
Heather, can I ask a question?
Yes.
So I'm just fascinated by that comment that so like Facebook was a legitimate stream of distribution for I see it more as like an experimental, like in an industry that traditionally has used other channels, you know, auction and among others. What it was a large resource, or more?
A very large resource. I can say from personal experience, prior to SDPB, I actually did marketing consulting, and I have worked with clients who were selling six figures worth of animals per year exclusively through Facebook, and that's not an uncommon situation.
And is that mainly through advertising, right? Like driving them back to their website? I mean, not the
The Facebook groups are hugely leveraged. Here in South Dakota, just in the ag world, there's probably four or five Facebook groups in the tens of thousands where people are buying and selling, or were rather, cattle, pigs, poultry, horses. And it become a very important stream, particularly for people exchanging breeding stock throughout the U.S. From experience, that's how we were actually able to build our pastured pork herd here in Clay County, South Dakota, was via contacts and advertising through Facebook.
Interesting.
And without that market and the ability to connect, livestock producers in the year 2017 don't have the options they did 40 years ago. There's not a small livestock market in every town. Especially when you're selling direct to consumers, the ability to connect on that one-to-one level, which Facebook has made so available, there's not another way to do it except for maybe Craigslist. And Craigslist has dealt with this particular situation. They have a ban on all pets, exotic animals, but specifically allow legal sales of livestock in order to support this sort of commerce.
So it seems like there's needed some sort of filter or categories of what animals are okay and what aren't.
Yep, and we all know how powerful Facebook's algorithms are. So it's, I think, within the realm of possibility that they could work with the livestock world to make this a viable option again.
This now makes sense to me because a couple of groups I belong to in this area are those kind of rummage sale groups. And there's, I can't believe it, there's like 10, 12,000 people in the one that I'm a part of, and they're from all these little towns around and from Vermilion. And in most of them, you see the little dollar sign that they're asking for money. That's that marketplace layer you're talking about. But when I do see puppies and kittens and that sort of thing for sale, they don't have dollar amounts, and they talk more about rehoming fees. Is that what this is all about?
Well, that's where that comes from. And Craigslist in the pet realm, and I won't go into the politics surrounding the buying and selling of pets, has seen that happen in the same way. And whatever your opinion there is, I can, you know. But livestock sales has come under the same jurisdiction on Facebook. And there's people who have just dropped out of using that. You know, they want to follow the rules. They want to do, they don't want to violate any policies. So they just don't even try. And there's a lot of people, you know, using different wording in order to accomplish the same goal in order to still impact the marketplace.
Rehome their beautiful
pets.
Rehome
their, you know, cows. I got my dairy cow up for adoption.
It sounds crazy, but that's... That's kind of what they have to do, I guess.
Yeah, and this a conversation starter, and if you ever follow Mark Zuckerberg on his page, what I find amazing, and it might be his, you know, fleet of, you know, PR people working with his page, but he's very responsive on there, and it's interesting that this conversation is, you know, hitting to the very top of something.
Well, I think it's important to think about, like, so even ask or explain, like, why is Mark Zuckerberg in South Dakota? And so, you know, every year Mark sets a big goal, like an annual goal that becomes his thing for the year. So in years past, he's learned Mandarin. He has built his own home AI robot to help him do tasks. The meat thing actually was a past goal. Like about several years ago, he said, I'm going to try to only eat meat that I can and raise or kill or butcher myself. So that's been a few years ago. But this year, his goal is to visit every state in the country. And so you're right, Heather. He's had this very kind of PR-gleamed Facebook and Instagram journey from state to state, very down-home, like meeting kind of the common person. And what's interesting, too, the initial other layer on top of all this is that a lot of people see through it and say, well, he wants to run for president. This is a political thing.
It feels like a presidential run.
And he's like, no, he's downplaying it. And because he can do it in a manner where it is very like PR filtered and the photos look beautiful and the comments can be, you know, edited and written, versus if he truly was coming out and saying, I'm running for president, there'd be cameras everywhere. And we all know one thing about Mark is he's come a long way, but in front of the camera, he's still a little bit awkward and he's still learning. And even in the Facebook Live down at the bottom of the research lab, you know, he did well, and he's very thoughtful and articulate, but it's just a little bit out of place for a Silicon Valley billionaire.
I was just going to ask, is there anybody else that does this kind of thing? I mean, boy.
Well, certainly there are people who have traveled to all the states, but I mean, not as such a high-profile kind of tour, and because everyone's like, well, why? You know, why are you trying to visit every state just to say you did it?
Zuckerberg went to the whatever foot level of the Sanford Research Facility. He didn't go to Mount Rushmore. Everybody goes to Mount Rushmore.
Sure.
You know, so I'm thinking more in the tech realm. I realize a trip to the farm. I mean, unless he was just stopping by to pick up a snack for his thing, he has to kill the meat before he eats it kind of a thing. But I imagine it's beyond that.
Yeah, and I think an article came out this week. I don't know if it was Wall Street Journal or Washington Post, but talked about kind of some of the PR regulations have leaked. Like if Zuckerberg's coming to your town, you can't tell anybody about it. You can't take pictures. It was like this kind of laundry list, almost like a music writer for when, you know, a big mega star comes to a concert and they only want the brown M&Ms. So it's been interesting to see how kind of crafted and filtered this experience is.
Well, and the interesting thing about that particular ranch he visited is a South Dakota politics side note. That is actually Marty Jackley's in-laws' ranch up there in the Black Hills.
Interesting.
Which Zuckerberg, of course, doesn't mention, but if I know on Marty Jackley's Facebook page, it was posted pretty instantaneously as a repost.
Well,
I saw the guy had Jack's gear on, so I was pumped. You know, go Jacks.
And what South Dakota rancher and farmer wouldn't I would
exactly.
say. Exactly. Well, well, that's foreshadowing, isn't it? Maybe a little bit on the conversation that you guys already had on that. Anyway, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing. That's certainly insights into a whole marketplace that kind of got turned up on its head in April. That's very interesting as well. Let me know if there's any response, will you, Heather?
I will do that.
We'd love to hear about it on the show in August. We've got a couple of tech radios coming up on the 4th and the 18th, I believe, and we'd certainly love to check back on the subject and see if any of these problems have been remedied. Because, like you say, those are some high dollar figures, and I can't imagine that's going to go unanswered, but it may. Anyway, it is time to take another quick break. Heather, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. We will bid you adieu, and we'll be back for more Tech Radio after this. And welcome back to In the Moment, Tech Radio on SDPB Radio. Just another quick programming note. We heard a few in the break before this. Next on Science Friday, it's the booming growth of solar and wind power and how that's stressing our ancient electrical grid. That'll be interesting. I'm going to tune in for that, and I hope you do too. But first, we got the third half of the show here. And guys, it was Prime Day this week. And I would like to go around and just ask, did anybody take advantage of that? Jeff Litterick, we haven't heard from you yet today. We had some technical difficulties. We apologize for that. But did you go nuts on Prime Day this week?
No. I will say I actually read a lot of the articles. There were a lot of lists of the worst stuff on Prime and the best stuff mm-hmm. for Prime Day. But nothing really caught my fancy at that point. So I decided to pass.
There don't seem to be any hiccups. I did not take advantage of Prime Day. I did order some tent stakes for this weekend, and they did show up on time. I was wondering if maybe they would, you know, but people would be buying so many crazy deals that, you know, it would slow down the distribution network or something, and maybe I, you know, underestimated their ability to crank things out, but my order arrived on time, and I didn't see anything I jumped at. John T. Meyer, did you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember we've been talking about Prime Day for the last maybe 3 years or how many years they've done it, and every year it's such hyped, and it's like I can get Crest whitening strips at a significant discount. I did buy one thing on that day, which probably is why they do Prime Day, because it just forced me to go to the website, and I bought something I've been meaning to buy, which was not on steep discount. I mean, I got a little discount by being a Prime member, but my wife and I have been looking for a running stroller for our daughter so we can kind of go on a run and still bring her with us. And so it was, I don't know, I think I saved $20 on a $220 stroller or something like that. So I bought one thing, but it wasn't one of the big special deals.
It wasn't like the Alexa. Now I've just turned Alexa on in the homes of.
I mean, they definitely are pushing. They pushed a lot of their products, right? The Echo and the
yeah,
Docs,
the Echo is on sale.
Kindle, those are probably the best deals.
Yeah, they were the Amazon Echo was like $80 off or something. It was
$99 instead of $180. Or
yeah,
something.
It was a really good deal. Maybe it was even $90 off. It was
$89.
I was kind of wishing I hadn't already loaded up on Amazon devices because I would have purchased some. But yeah, basically all their devices were at a deep discount. I did buy some things just because I kind of cruised through to see if there was anything that I would be interested in, and I bought some goggles for my daughter and bought a couple towels. I did get a little external battery for the Amazon Echo Dot. So I definitely made purchases that I wouldn't probably have made had they not. Good deals if you were looking for that at the time. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure that they get really good sales out of it. It's no different than a sale.
Yeah,
and
their ultimate goal, obviously, is driving Prime subscriptions. Because they have the data that shows inventory. If you're on Prime, if you're a Prime member, you spend more, you visit the site more. They have tons. They've proven that. So they just want to get you to sign up.
Hmm. Well, yeah. The reason I bring this up is not just to talk about Prime Day, but there's been a couple of stories in the news about Amazon getting too big, and government is talking about that fact.
the Whole Foods thing, the bid, a slew of announcements from Amazon Wardrobe, Amazon.com Inc., and some investor calls this week, has folks talking, I guess, and they're wondering if government intervention is imminent. Have you guys heard those rumblings? And discuss, I guess, is Amazon getting too big to fail? Do we need some government in there?
Too big to fail.
I don't know.
Yeah, just... I wouldn't say too big to fail. Maybe a little bit too big, and kind of compared to like a Walmart driving stores out of business and stuff. Though some are still doing good. Target just has posted some really good numbers. So maybe even that argument's not holding all that much outside of the retailers that are kind of hurting right now, like Sears and Kmart and JCPenney's.
Okay. Jeff? Joel? Joel or John?
Yeah, I don't think it's a recent thing that people have been saying Amazon's been getting too big. I know that there's some news out there about it right now. You know, that ship has sailed, I think. You know, whether they might turn Amazon down on, you know, purchasing Whole Foods, which, frankly, that would be a pretty hard thing to prove, that it's too much in their area. I think that's a pretty logical merger. If you're out there and you think Amazon's getting too big because they sell everything and they're putting stores out of business, breaking up Amazon's not going to fix that. I mean, that's just the way it's going to go. Amazon just is the first one to do it, and they're really good at it.
Yeah.
So that's not going to change anything. And I think when it gets looked into, whoever the people that are looking into it, they're going to come up with the same
thing. I know that they fought the whole sales tax thing for a long time in various states, because since they're selling online, they claimed, you know, their customers don't have to pay sales tax. And they've started to concede that even in South Dakota.
Yeah, I think they would prefer to have people pay sales tax. At least that's the last thing I heard.
Yeah, now I think, yeah. Years ago, they tried to
everybody else. Yep. Yeah, for sure. But now, I mean, I think they're like, yeah, sign us up. Set that up. And now, of course, the bottleneck is not the Amazon or the companies. It's the government.
The government, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think they're going to be tough to stop. I think they're I'm not sure if that's a bad thing. I mean, I think Amazon's a really fascinating company, and they've disrupted a lot of industries. I mean, certainly I like to support local and that type of small business. But, I haven't heard a whole lot about them.
Well, I mean, there's supporting local, and then there's buying napkins. I mean, there are no local organic napkins, you know. I mean, there's no, you know.
Maybe in Brooklyn, but.
Yeah. There's no, locally sourced iPhone. I mean, those things are just logical to get from a reseller, and especially when it's super easy. You know, I'd order something on Amazon today if I wanted, and it would be here on Sunday. Sunday! I would have never guessed that I could get something on Sunday, on a random Sunday in July, but I can.
Well, oh, yeah, and it's not far. In some parts of the country, larger metro areas, it's same day.
Yeah, same day, or 4 hours. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, and that's the way it's going to be.
But out here in out here in the sticks or whatever, in South Dakota, it's a double-edged sword, really. I mean, it's you can get anything in 2 days anywhere in South Dakota, basically. And yes, it's competition for the local, if there is, but it's a great boon to somebody that needs something. That they don't have to drive 50 miles or more, and it'll be dropped off in a red or a yellow or a white or a brown truck in a couple of days, regular standard shipping as well. But it's kind of that double-edged thing. It's yes, it is hard on the brick and mortar in some instances, but it's a for the consumer. It's turned out to be a great thing.
You know, and Amazon's most famous for its books, but even Pierce still has a local bookstore. Some of the big chains kind of got knocked out and had a retreat in book sales and stuff, but if you can evolve your business to offer stuff you just can't get in terms of price from Amazon, you can still survive.
And I think you can do more than survive. I mean, you can, if you find, that's a really good point, Jeff. If you, no matter whether it's books or what it is you do, if you can, you know, create your business into a business that is a destination for people, and you can do things, whether it's service or sourcing, that a retailer like Amazon can't do, you can do really well. And, you know, I think that's the point, really.
Yeah, because brick and mortar was going to be disrupted eventually. It just was, Amazon was the one to really
yeah,
do it
and
lead the charge.
I thought
so,
of this. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. No, I just wanted to get this in. You know, if it's not Amazon shipping something to you in 2 days, it's not going to be too long where a lot of these products you're going to just hit print on, and they're going to show up in your printer.
3D printer.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's, whether that's 5-10 years off, that's still going to be disruption. So, you know, break them up. It's not going to be the same whether you like it or not.
Yep, I agree.
All right. Well, interesting discussion. We'll see how that plays out. And I'm sure there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers in that one. But we'll keep our eye on that on the show. Net neutrality seems to be back rearing its head. We have seen some eyebrow raising. Did some big money people flip flop on this issue, or am I reading things wrong?
Joel, you want to give the breakdown quick on net neutrality?
Yeah, we can just give a quick primer
sure.
on what
I think
net
sometimes
neutrality
people don't
is. Absolutely.
Understand the side, which side of the issue, because it's kind of confusing word.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of intricacies. You know, really, if you want a full explanation of what this is and what's going on, and you can find this, I think, clips of it on YouTube. John Oliver did a
sure.
really good overview that you can find on HBO. He did it a while back, but it's still probably the best explanation I've seen. But basically, it's the idea that all traffic on the internet, whether that's you sending your email to grandma or FaceTiming your daughter or buying something from Amazon,
watching
should go
Netflix.
The same speed.
Yep.
No matter what it is, no matter who you are, you, if you pay for a certain speed, you get that speed. Anybody that pays X amount gets it. They can't pay extra to slow you down, or they can't pay extra to make sure that this traffic from Netflix is more important than your traffic.
That means you're pro for net neutrality.
Yes, that is what called net neutrality is. It's everybody is treated equally.
Yep.
All speeds are equal. And it's a misconception to say that what's going on now, the government wants to roll back net neutrality.
Isn't there some Obama legislation?
Yeah, the legislation hasn't actually been engaged yet. It was just proposed and
yeah.
was going to be implemented here pretty soon. And now, since the changeover of the administration, they're going to roll back the protections that actually haven't been put in place yet.
I think the person who President Trump put in charge of FCC is anti-net neutrality, so
very,
that's why there's some concerns.
Very, yes.
Yeah. And because essentially, so if net neutrality went away, I think the best way to explain it to someone is think of your Verizon cell phone plan, which has all these tiers and options, and you can put, so essentially they're saying for $59 a month, you can get Gmail and surfing Safari on Google and Twitter at normal speeds, but if you want to watch Hulu or Netflix, you have to pay $79 a month. And if you want to stream Twitch and play your video games like live, you got to pay $99 a month. And this idea that that the companies or Comcast type of company could throttle the internet and change the speed or adjust the speeds.
Yeah, and a lot of those companies have declared that, you know, we don't want to do that. We're not going to do that. You know, things change. I mean, just because you say you're not going to do it now, you know, if the rest of the market starts doing it, I guarantee you Verizon's going to do it, or whoever it is. So, and it's unfortunate that, you know, the overwhelming majority of the people in the U.S. are against kind of this non-net neutrality rollback that's going to happen. And normally the FCC opens up comments to the people if you want to comment and send an email, but they've really buried it, and they've made it very quite a bit harder than when this first came out about 2 years ago to voice opinions on. So but if you do some searches, you can make your voice heard. You can call your representative, congressman, and and I encourage everybody to do that, no matter what side of it is.
Prominent internet player, like I was on medium.com, like some of the big sites are starting to put buttons that would, you know, that jump you to another site. All you have to do is put your zip code in, you can send a letter to your representative. And so I think the internet's going to start to come out here and, you know, really get people to rally.
Well, and the reason it's popped back up is they had a net neutrality day of action a couple of days ago, and that's why we saw that big push. It was actually kind of impressive, the amount of emails that I got from different companies and where it popped up in my social feeds and all that. It really brought it out, and then of course there was the call to action. I didn't actually take any action on it myself, but boy, if you were on a number of those different websites or companies that are speaking out about it, you heard about it a couple of days ago.
No, it did get a little confusing. AT&T, which is one of the major players that has sued against net neutrality in the FCC, and actually has won, and many times before, is actually now for net neutrality. So they're paying up a whole bunch of money and stuff now. So there's a lot of interesting players going back and forth, both opposing and going approving of it all at the same time. So it got a little confusing that day, actually.
I want to bust in here. We got a comment that I kind of want to take care of. Somebody said, wait, Google already throttles our, or not Google, Verizon already throttles our speed when we exceed certain data levels. That's not exactly the same thing, because the amount of data that you use, they can have a cap on that. But the difference is they can, with no net neutrality, they can control how fast anything goes, and not cap an amount of data, but throttle it in such a way to slow it down, because it's more advantageous for them monetarily to use this traffic over this traffic. So it's not really the same thing.
The Verizon analogy I was using, if you're on the basic plan, watching Netflix may just not be feasible because you're not paying enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And boy, we've tried to crack the net neutrality nut a few times on this show, and we've mostly gotten through it, but there's certainly lots more to read on the internet. And I will just say, I'll forward folks and say, there's been because of this increased awareness this week, there's a lot of really great articles out there that can help put it in perspective for you. And if you so feel the need to speak out to your representatives one way or the other, now's a good time to do
that.
And
I would encourage you to do so. I'll use the platform. So
yeah,
net neutrality is a really good thing.
Okay. Well, thank you, John T. Meyer. Appreciate that, as well as help today from Jeff Litterick and Joel Brovelite. Thank you, gentlemen, for being a part of the show. Want to let everybody know to have a great weekend. Stay cool and stay hydrated. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you in August.